All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are live. Welcome everybody to episode 26 of Logos Academy. We were live on Monday. Today is Wednesday, and we're live again. We'll have one more show coming up on Friday as well. I'm thinking I'm going to work in a call-in show most likely tomorrow. Let me look at my calendar here. Yeah, let's do a call-in show for tomorrow. I know we said we were either going to do it yesterday or Thursday, so let's do it on Thursday. Since it's going to be a call-in show, I'd like to do those a little later, so I'll do it at 7 o'clock Eastern, and then that way we can kind of do a little bit of a late night show. So we'll do a call-in show tomorrow, 7 o'clock Eastern. If you guys are on the Odyssey, the Logos Revealed Eye on Rumble, or if you're on FTJ, you guys can find it over there on any of those platforms. It obviously won't be on the Stu Peters Network because we're only there at a set time slot of 4 p.m. Eastern on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I think that'll be it for the shows this week. I don't think we're going to do a show over the weekend. I'm probably going to take the weekend to try to post some Twitter threads. I have a couple like fleshed out Twitter threads that I haven't actually uploaded yet. So I think that's what's going to be the aim for this weekend, is I'm going to try to put some of those out because I have three or four things in mind. We're going to do one on the ADL. I'm going to do one on Marxism. And I'm actually probably going to do one on the topic of the show today, which is the music industry. I think this kind of goes hand in hand with what we discussed on the last show. We talked about culture and how we've lost culture over time. And I think the music industry is a really big piece in that, or a big factor rather, in the losing of our culture over time. We can see how we've gone from music that was very relaxed, very cultured in the truest sense of the word, and it had meaning and value to it. And the music of today has become very degenerate, very primitive. It's kind of lost that original spirit that was present in the music before. I don't even know if you can call some of this stuff music anymore. So we'll go into that a little bit. We'll talk about how destructive it's been for society, and then we'll also talk about how it happened and some of the different actors, we'll use the word actors, that played a pretty big role in the foundation of this more degenerate music industry. But as usual, we'll wait. We'll let some people fill into the chat room first, and then we'll start with the topic. Please do let me know that the audio is okay on Odyssey as well. I know typically that's the one that gives us audio problems. So if you guys are watching over on Odyssey, just give me a thumbs up or an A-OK to let me know that it's working well. And I do apologize if you guys hear background noise. It's raining pretty hard out right now. It's actually kind of distracting me. It's very loud. Hasn't rained here in months. This is the first time in a while. Don't forget, folks, we are live on all platforms as usual. I do recommend, if you guys aren't already, checking out that. It's in my Twitter bio. I'll actually put the link in the chat rooms right now. If you're not checking out my bio site, I really recommend that you guys check that out. It's a good way to catch up on all my platforms. I like this site. It's convenient. I mean, it's essentially like Linktree, but I believe it's not Jewish, so. Throw the link in the chat rooms here. Okay. And as is present on the bio site, we're live on Odyssey, Rumble, we're on FTJ. I discussed this last show. I made a TikTok account. I'm going to try to put clips up on TikTok. I really don't like the platform at all. I don't like the layout. 90% of the content when you first go on to TikTok and you kind of scroll through a little bit, it's just complete brain rot. That platform is horrendous. So I mean, I'll try to post clips up on there. I have a lot of clips saved already. I tried posting a clip earlier, it was a couple days ago, onto TikTok, and I got this very odd notification that my clip was unoriginal, whatever the fuck that means. So because of the unoriginal tag, I wasn't able to put my clip up in like a recommended. I don't know. I don't know anything about TikTok, so I sound like a boomer right now. So I'll learn it. We'll get it figured out. Dom brother, it's nice to see you. You got to get your show kicked off, my friend. I'm looking forward to coming on there. I want to see your show. Pavlov, welcome. Pavlov, when you get a chance, can you check your Telegram messages? I don't know if you actually, I don't even know if you ever read my message. I don't blame you because I don't check mine enough either, so just when you get a chance. Yes, TikTok is extremely degenerate. I scrolled through. I was just looking to see, what tags pick up a lot of views, because I know tags are a big thing on TikTok. And I looked up the Jewish tag, and I was just completely disgusted with what I was scrolling through and seeing. So a lot of those videos of people like showing how they trick God with all their weird kosher methods and those things. But then additionally, there was actually like a video of this like crippled Jewish woman making hamantaschen with her family, which we've talked about hamantaschen before. If you guys aren't familiar, that is Hebrew for Haman's ears, which is a cookie that is shaped like an ear. It's literally like cannibalistic symbolism. These people are repulsive. Anti-Freemason, welcome. Welcome. I like the name. We got Doug Aston. Hello. Yes, they are. I agree. Welcome, James. So again, we'll let some people fill in. We'll pick up on the topic in about 10 minutes or so, something like that. Probably quarter after. Muted on Odyssey? Nice. That's good. Thank you for the heads up. Yeah, Odyssey's, I don't know why it does this. So that being said, you guys again can watch on other platforms if Odyssey is giving you a problem. We are on Rumble. I've heard from a couple people now, probably almost a dozen people, that Odyssey is now giving people like freezing issues when they try to watch back videos. A lot of people are saying that they were having a really hard time watching some of my content because it just kept perpetually freezing. So I need to catch up on a couple more videos on my Rumble channel. So if you guys are following me on Odyssey and Rumble, I have my whole archive on Odyssey, and I'm slowly working on getting my archive up onto Rumble. I feel like I have most of the good stuff up there, but I guess I could probably put a little bit more. I'm getting way more views on Rumble than I am on Odyssey, and I haven't been on Rumble nearly as long, so. Maybe Rumble is the place to go. I'll try to put a little more effort into Rumble. Sounds good? Okay, perfect. Thank you guys. I appreciate you letting me know it was muted. It's an annoying process. So Pavlov, since you are on Odyssey now, it's fixed. If you didn't hear me earlier, if you could check your Telegram whenever you get time, I would appreciate it, brother. Okay, let's get into the topic about again, it kind of ties hand in hand with what we talked about yesterday or Monday rather. We talked about culture in America, what American culture really is, and this kind of concept of the American dream, right? And this American dream has, well, I guess it used to mean years and years and years ago. That you wanted to go to the new world away from Europe, you wanted to try something new, and you wanted to try to make a killing for yourself in the land of opportunity, right? Where anybody could basically do anything, they could pursue any kind of life, and it would be sustainable for them. Obviously, that's not the case now. You can't pursue 80% of what you would want to pursue back in the day. And actually make a decent living off of it. I mean, at this point, the average American household, you need physically two people working a 9-to-5 in order to keep up the household, unless they have a extremely unique high-paying job, which is, you know, it makes them in the lesser percentage of society. So we've kind of lost that original concept of, you know, coming here and building a nice life for yourself and having a good place for your family and to, you know, raise children and raise grandchildren. And the American dream has shifted into this new concept of this very materialistic drive. So this has greatly been fomented through, well, through music, but additionally through social media. Social media has been a really big piece in that. Both of these have reshaped, and Hollywood as well, and they brag about this. If you've ever seen the movie Hollywoodism, I really recommend you guys watch that movie if you have not seen it. As you know, I'm not one for movies, but that movie is very informative. It's essentially a guy interviewing all of the Jews that founded Hollywood and them bragging that it was Jewish that they created Hollywood. And the concept of American Dream itself, they say themselves, was a Jewish invention. They say that in the movie, and this is coming from Jews. So you can't call it anti-Semitic. Or maybe you can. Maybe they're self-hating Jews, right? So in this film, they display how the American Dream was fomented through Hollywood. But additionally, if we look through, you know, social media and we look through the music industry, that concept was also formulated through there as well. Look at the rap industry. The rap industry is probably like one of the most sound examples of this. You get these degenerate, you know, ghetto people living in the hood who grew up in these like crack-infested areas, gunslinging, in all these gang wars and things of the sort, and they decide, I want to make it out of the hood, right? So they pursue music, and you know, this is very common in that kind of ghetto circles, these like underground rappers and things of the sort, and they decide they want to pursue music. Now, like 90% of them, it goes nowhere. But there's that little small percentage that the Jewish industry sees what they're doing, somehow picks up on it. They blast it out into the mainstream, and then other idiots, unfortunately, follow this. And the first thing that these people do, because they didn't grow up in an area that's cultured, they didn't grow up around people that are cultured, they didn't grow up with any kind of morality or civilizational awareness. They grew up simply on this, well, they call it street smarts, but when you look in these areas, it's more of a primitive way of life. So they grew up in this kind of an atmosphere and a mindset. And the first thing they do when they get this big record deal and they go into the music industry is they buy themselves a Lamborghini and a mansion, and they're buying all the big chains, and now their music is about them bragging about all the money that they have and how they made it out of the hood, and the other people are stuck in there. And now this shapes a new view, and this one is maybe more specific to blacks, but this shapes a new view of what the American dream is for them. And then the same thing happens through Hollywood and social media with white people. We see this this new idea of being an internet influencer. That's a really big one, right? Being an internet star or being a Hollywood celebrity. And the Hollywood celebrity, I think, isn't as strongly desired as it was, you know, 40, 50 years ago, or maybe even 20 to 40 years ago. The desire to be like a Hollywood movie star used to be really large, right, in civilization, because that was the main point of influence where people looked up to it. Now the internet has kind of taken Hollywood by storm, and a lot of people are watching Netflix and they don't really care as much about Hollywood, and there's a lot of these kind of like low level production films that are getting out there with not very famous actors in them or whatever. So that idea of what they idolize has shifted from a Hollywood celebrity to an internet influencer, right? And these internet influencers are, well, look what grows, look what makes the rounds on the internet, especially if you go on YouTube or you know, one of these really popular video types, which I think is just absolutely insane, is mukbangs, right? This is insane to me. But I've seen countless videos of massive 500-pound gorillas just eating endlessly in front of a camera for 2 to 3 million views on a video. I mean, this is, we're seriously talking about civilizational death. But the final and most important piece that's really done this shaping of our culture has really been the music industry. And that's the one I want to go into the most on the show today, because the music industry is, it's very deceptive. And if you don't look really hard, you fail to see how it has seeded itself, how this has actually happened. It's easy to see the results because the results have been so strong and damning, but it's very hard to see the process itself and how that happened and how it was allowed to happen. I see we got a Jay Dazzle in the chat. Welcome. Fairy says, you had to buy a house in 2004. Yeah, it was a lot easier back then before the 2008 recession. And you know, inflation has just skyrocketed. The market is terrible. Pavlov, no problem. Not a problem at all, brother. Just take a drink. Yeah, fashion culture is a big one. And again, this gets pushed through the music industry. That's a really good piece as well. You know, when you look at fashion brands, a lot of these brands that are considered higher class or more established or popular, majority of them are Jewish. There are very few that aren't. You know, maybe not as many of the designer brands. I don't know of as many of them, to be entirely honest. Maybe I'd have to look into those, because I haven't looked very deeply into them. But I know, you know, like Polo, Ralph Lauren, that's a very Jewish brand. A lot of the really odd clothing trends back in the day were extremely Jewish. They were just founded by Jews and popularized through the media, and they were completely stupid. One of the bigger ones, if you were around in the late 80s, early 90s, maybe even into the late 90s, those Jenko jeans, where the pocket was about the half the size of the back pant leg. Those were a very popular fashion trend. Those were made by two Israeli Jews. They even have like very weird like Hebrew names. I can't remember their names. It's been so long since I learned that. But that's a big one. Actually, the modern bikini was actually designed by a French Jew as well. So you see this process kind of continue itself time and time again with these people. They're, you know, making fashion trends that have pulled us further and further away from just dressing nicely, right? Which is again what we talked about on Monday, how important it is for us to dress with standards, dress well, dress up. And they've done this for, I mean, we as a people have done this for thousands of years. I mean, it's always been a sign of a cultured people to dress with the utmost look or value to your what you're wearing. And not value in the sense of material monetary value, right? Like, oh, this is a very expensive item, but rather value in the sense of how hard it was to create, right? How hard it is to put on every day, right? So that's a very important aspect in there as well, is fashion. And fashion, yet again, is fomented through the music industry. 50 years ago, or maybe more than 50, if you go back to the 1950s in the United States of America, you would never see a group of people walking around in just t-shirts. Never happened. It wasn't a thing. And if they did wear just a t-shirt, they were wearing a plain white t-shirt. This idea of logos and brand names and all this shit on t-shirts, historically, from, you know, the time of civilizational foundation to now, is very new. It's like a newborn baby. It's a very fresh thing. No one talks about this. This is never discussed. But This is brand new. This idea that we walk around wearing a brand name on our t-shirt, literally being a walking advertisement for a large corporation or a company. This is completely brand new. And we're seeing the consequences of this, right? To a point where standards have just dropped so low with how people dress. No one cares anymore. No one gives a shit. No one looks at somebody that's not dressed well and says, oh, they're dressed really lazy to go to the grocery store. No one cares. They would rather just kind of stay in their own lane, do their own thing, and ignore having any kind of societal standards. And likewise, no one looks at somebody who's dressed really well. Not no one, but less people than there should be, look at people that are dressed really nicely and say, wow, you know, he looks really good, or, oh, wow, she looks wonderful in that dress. You know, not a lot of people look at that and care about that anymore. It's there. It's intrinsic in some people. You will see it, but it's losing its grounding. Because yet again, it's being psychologically beaten out of us, the same way that we talked about our survival instincts and our tribal nature. We talked last episode about how that's being beat out of us. In the same way, the idea of standards and values are slowly being beat out of us. The normalization of just whatever and however. And that was especially strong, again, in America. Because what do people tell you, especially, you know, conservatives, when you say something about, you know, you go to a store with somebody or you go to a restaurant with your family and you say, oh, wow, look at the way that Shibun is dressed. That's disgusting. And, you know, your family members say, oh, it's a free country. It's a free country. You know, I don't really care what they do. It's a free country. Well, you should care because the standards are very important. And the further those standards decline, the more we lose our way societally. And we're watching it. Yeah, Fairy, they'll wear anything. People will wear literally food brands. I mean, there are people wearing, like, I've seen ramen noodle outfits. Like a ramen noodle jumpsuit. Or they're wearing a full attire that is advertising ramen noodles. The cheapest food in the world. Cheap, industrialized plastic with bioengineered food ingredients for 12 cents on the fucking shelf. And people are wearing that on their clothing. Yeah, I believe Balenciaga is shady. I don't know if there's any Jewish. I have to look further into. I'm not a fashion guy. I don't even know that many brands. I have to look a little bit further into how Jewish the fashion industry actually is. Justice, welcome. Thank you for the greetings. I appreciate that. So we got James over in the chat. Nice that you caught the show. Coomerness, that's great. That's awesome. Mayu? Am I saying that right? Maui? Maui? As a boomer, I covered up or ripped off labels and still try to look well-dressed whenever. That's amazing. That's a very good standard to hold. I do the same. You will very, very rarely see me ever wear... even when I do dress down and wear a t-shirt, I try always to just wear a plain t-shirt. I have a couple shirts that have a logo on them, and I'm actually extremely apologetic when I wear them. I only wear them in the house, and if I've ever worn them on my show, it's like once or twice, and I don't like doing it. I hate advertising somebody else's idea or concept on my shirt. And that's kind of the way the system works, right? Typically, if I'm to, let's say, for instance, I'm to advertise a white nationalist is selling razors, and I decide I want to advertise his razor company to my chat room, I am getting a cut for doing that. Well, there is no perceived benefit, except for one, when you wear a Supreme t-shirt or a Louis Vuitton t-shirt or one of these things. The only perceived benefit that you get for advertising their product is social scores, social credit, right? People go, oh wow, he's got a really he's wearing that Supreme. Damn, he must be rich. But you know what this kind of boils down to? You look at a lot of the people that are wearing these things. They're the poorest people in the world. I mean, they're completely. barren when it comes to wealth, but they wear that because they want to look like they have money, right? It doesn't make much sense. It doesn't hold well. So to go back to the music industry, I want to talk about how some of this was seeded. We talked about kind of this gang, this rap culture, which is predominantly geared towards the blacks, but has also seeded itself a little bit towards whites. And there's a really interesting way that this actually came into play, because rap music started out in the late 70s, 80s, in this time period. And it started out, it was very black. It was a predominantly black thing. It was very clear to people, this is just a black thing. It used to be rap groups was the big thing. They had the Wu-Tang Clan, and I don't know very many other groups, but I know there was a lot of black groups. And they started maybe a little not too bad, and slowly they started getting into rapping about, drugs and degeneracy and having sex and making money. Making money is always the big one, which again re-foments into people's minds that idea of the American dream. And now what's really interesting is there was a couple white rappers in the very beginning. They had like a Vanilla Ice, right? And his music was pretty harmless. And the Jews realized, if we want white people to follow this degenerate rap music, they have to be able to identify with it, right? It has to feel like something that they can identify with. And this is the thing with Jews. They're fantastic in marketing. They know marketing better than anybody else. And they said, okay, how do we make white people identify with rap music? Can anybody in here guess how they made white people identify with rap music? What one of the biggest and earliest pieces of getting white people to identify with rap was? I'm very curious. I'm curious if anybody knows off the top. It's pretty obvious. Anonymous says, "Hey brother, any advice for someone working for a Jew that constantly favors other Jews and pays them better than me when I'm the longest working person for the company? Leave. Leave. Find something else. Start looking now. While you work, start looking. Start looking. And the second that you get there, the second you find something else, leave. I wouldn't even put in the 2 weeks' notice." Perfect. Dean with the subscription to the Stu Peters Network Loyal, so thank you for subscribing to Stu. I appreciate that on his behalf. Justice says Eminem. Yes, that is the big one. Eminem is how they absolutely normalized this black degenerate culture to white people. It's how they got them to identify with it. So if you pay close attention, well, let's just kind of start. Eminem, his manager and lawyer has and always has been and continues to be today, Paul Rosenberg. Paul Rosenberg, he's a well, I don't think I need to say what he is. I think we get it. I think it's rhetorical, right? It's probably a given. So Paul Rosenberg was the guy that helped him with his first album and helped him get it out there. Probably had some connections to other Jews who were in the music industry, and was able to get him a record deal. I don't know how he met this Paul Rosenberg. That would be maybe nice to know. I will potentially actually try to find maybe like an interview or something. I'm sure there's something out there where I can find them explaining how they met each other, and I can probably play that on the show. I know when we're on the Rumble Studio, I unfortunately can't play video clips because you can't hear them. So I'll play it maybe on my call-in show. We'll do something like that. And this Paul Rosenberg gets Eminem connected to the rap industry, and they get him a record label. And when you pay close attention, his first album, it's just garbage degeneracy. If anybody's familiar with Eminem's first album, Slim Shady LP, it is completely degenerate, repulsive. All of it is about doing drugs. beating the shit out of people, raping people, killing people, having weird sex with people, extracting people's brains and putting them back in and torturing people. Weird, freaky, degenerate shit. All of the whole thing. Every song. There's not one song on there that does not literally follow that line of thought. It's the whole first album. So then he gets this big record label, and then he comes out with a new album. And they realized, okay, wait a minute, this is a lot. You know, he's very aggressive. He's very over the top. This could be popular. You know, some people are liking the whole degenerate thing, but we want to pull more people in. So they say, how do we pull more people in? That, okay, they already identify with the fact that he's white like them. He's a white boy who made it in the rap game, which gives others the impression that they can do the same, which is what literally creates Wiggers by inception. And now his next album that comes out, if you pay attention to this one, all of a sudden, he's anti-system, right? He's talking about the censorship of the system and how he has to, we got to put it to the man because they won't let me say what I want on the radio. You know, fuck the studios, fuck this, fuck the media. He's saying things like this that now that gains the sentiment of the common man who says, wow, you know, I don't really like all the baggy t-shirts and the three sizes too large pants, but you know, he's saying some reasonable stuff about the media, you know, about how they're fucking us over. That's true. You know, that's true. It's just like with Trump, right? Trump wins the sentiments of the common man because he stands up there and he says shit they like. Doesn't matter if it's true or not. Doesn't matter if he really means it or not. He says shit they like. He says, oh, yeah, you know, oh, the swamp. We got to drain the swamp. The terrible people. The terrible. They're destroying the country. Right? Well, is he actually... Does he actually care? No. He's very well entwined in that swamp. He doesn't want to drain that. So they marketed this individual perfectly to the American populace to a point where this was a time when, you know, there was still people that were like, look, you know, I'm not big on niggers. Like, I'm not listening to that nigger music. I'm good, right? So they had to normalize it to white people. And when they were able to normalize the music to the white people, now they'll accept anything from anyone because now they just like the music, right? So they did the same thing with politics, by the way. We'll get into that in a second. But so white people would originally say, oh, well, you know, I'll listen to Eminem because, like, I resonate with that. And then all of a sudden now they're like, wait a minute. Oh, that other rapper, Lil Wayne, he's good too. You know, I like that song. It sounds a lot like Eminem, and they do features together, and they do collabs together. So now, if you only listen to Eminem because you're white and you don't want to listen to black music, well, now you hear Eminem and Lil Wayne sing on a track, and you go, oh, wow, that weird monkey sounds fantastic. You know, let me try his songs. And this is a process of normalization. This is something that 50 years ago, no white people would ever accept listening to blacks on the radio singing about literally fucking white chicks doing drugs and making money. They wouldn't listen to that garbage. Now they're listening to it. There's literally wiggers that are listening to black nigger music where they're singing about fucking white women. Where are we culturally? We've lost ourselves, right? So this is how they brought people in. And I know this actually directly through my biological parents who fell directly into this. Both of them fell exactly into this degenerate culture. They listened to all this fucking rap music, and they started with Eminem. They went right down that pipeline, and then they were listening to all the other little black groups, and they slowly just it's a process of normalization. And you could see it in the way that they dressed, in their lingo, their behaviors, their habits. They were... It changed them. It influenced them in the wrong direction. Both of my parents, every other word out of their mouth was fuck perpetually since I was a child. It's all I ever heard from them. Fuck, fuck, fuck. It's an adjective, a verb, a noun. You put it anywhere. They use it as a conjunction. It's insane how often both of them use it. So it's slow. It's a slow process. But that's how it works. Now, they did the same thing with politics. The Conservative Party normalized talking points that this is the conservative line. This is what we all agree on. You notice you talk to any conservative, they agree on the same 10 things. They all agree on guns, abortion, Israel, immigration, and LGBTQ in the exact same fashion. Because it's given talking points. You're never going to talk to a regular conservative who says, oh, yeah, well, you know, I support guns, but I don't support Israel. Or, I support Israel, but I don't support guns. Because the talking points, you're in a box, you're in a tent. And everybody, it's already written on the board inside the tent when you walk in and sign up, I'm a conservative. These are the talking points for that. That's your views. You have to do that. And people follow it because people are influenced. People are followers, right? So now through politics, they gave the line. They normalized what the line of talking is. They put all white people up on the television. There was never blacks on Fox News and all this. And then slowly, they just gave black people the line. And now blacks go on and they say exactly what any white guy would be saying the same thing because it's just a talking point that they've gotten on a script. And now the black guys come on and they say the same shit. And now the white people go, oh, yeah, wow, he's one of those cultured black guys. He's a sweater vest Negro. Wow, he's really good. He supports Trump. They're not thinking. They've lost the conviction. Because that party line is, we're not racist. That's the conservative party line. We're not racist. So this is a process of normalization. And back to music, this even happened in country music. This is a phenomenal occurrence when you look at it. Let's talk about it. Country music. How did it start? Country music started with westerns, right? With the twangy banjo. And they were singing about riding a horse, going into the town, you know, maybe talking about a good old Western duel, talking about the sheriff was chasing down the bandits, you know, talking about bounty hunting. You know, these things that were really in the truest essence American culture. Actually, I'll give you a fantastic example, and he wouldn't even be considered Western. He'd probably fit more into the country category, maybe not. Marty Robbins, if you guys are familiar with Marty Robbins. Marty Robbins is a perfect example of this. That's the encapsulation of true American culture, okay? Marty Robbins, he sang songs about, he sang very Christian songs. He sang songs about being a cattle rancher and a farmer and riding throughout the Wild West. And he actually sang songs about, you know, looking, he was singing, he has a song, it's called The Master's Call, right? It's a very interesting song. If you guys aren't familiar with it, I highly recommend you listen to it, because it's really, it shows something very important. In this song, he talks about how he was a cattle rancher, and he was essentially, almost like a bandit, right? Robbing and stealing and things like this, out in the Wild West. And he says, one night it occurred to him, he uses kind of some symbolism and some allegories and things, and he says, one night it occurred to him that this way of living is sinful, and it's going to create bad results in his life. And, you know, I'm not particularly, you know, super religious in any one denomination, but he talks about finding Christ as his solution for that. And it shows you that even someone, you know, in this Western culture of, and I mean like Wild West, not like the Occident West, in this Wild Western culture, even looked at living like a bandit in that time period. He looked at that as his degenerate way of life, and he said, I have to pull myself away from that. And he made a song about that. Instead of influencing people to be a bandit and rob and steal, he was influencing people in the opposite direction. And a lot of his songs are very much in this category. That's what country music used to be in this country. Then they started with this, you know, CMT, country music television or whatever it is, or country music, I don't know, it's something like that. CMT is it's the big one that everybody listens to. And they slowly started putting newer things in. So, again, it's a slow process of normalization. Today, we have a fat, obese, disgusting, degenerate, repulsive human being. His name is Jelly Roll. One in the chat if you guys are familiar with Jelly Roll. Two if you are not familiar with Jelly Roll. I will pull a picture of him up. Delta, thank you for making it, even if late. I appreciate that. Yeah, Marty Robbins has very good music. Let me see if I can find, show a picture of Jelly Roll, if you guys aren't familiar with this repulsive, obese piece of human garbage. Okay. So bad with technology. I really love the music. And slowly, slowly, over time, all of the convictions you once held, all of the standards you once held, have been broken down. It's like a Jenga tower. If anybody's played Jenga, the Jew goes, oh, tattoos? Let's pull that one out. That's not a standard anymore. Oh, you don't like rap beats? Let's pull that one out. That's not a standard any longer. Degenerate sex culture? Let's pull that one out of there. And slowly, your Jenga tower, which was this very firm, solid wooden structure, becomes this feeble, teeter-tottering, cultureless, degenerate cesspool waiting to collapse. It's just waiting to collapse. And then, all it takes is one blow, and no one cares anymore. It's complete apathy. And we're seeing it. We're seeing the results of this in our country today. Because everything has lost its standards. Everything has lost its culture, its convictions. Every value, every piece of morality that has been laid out is being systematically and actively broken down in real time by these people. So Jelly Roll he is a pipeline. He's an example of many more to come. Expect worse, seriously. He is a pipeline for this. And they gave him like 3 CMT awards. He's already one of the biggest guys out there. His manager's a Jew. It's not surprising. And you're going to see a lot more of this. Just pull something up quick as well. Now, if you don't know, one in the chat, if you guys know who Sumner Redstone is, two if you do not. One if you know who Sumner Redstone is. His real name is Rothstein. Changed it, like always. I think we might pull this one up a little. It's important to go into. Just to exemplify what we're dealing with here. In case anyone says, oh, this isn't Jewish. You're crazy. No, Jelly Roll's not a Jew. He's a convenient goy that they use. Okay. That's what they always do. It's like Eminem. They take degenerate white people who have lost their way, and they use them as pawns in this. Okay, wow, not a lot of people know who Sumner Redstone is. Okay, this is very important you guys know this, so we're going to pull this up. This is extremely crucial. You have to know these things. All right, well, I hope you guys can see that. I hope this is large enough. Okay, so this is country music television. Okay, now just like everything else, if you pay close attention, this is the corporate oligarchy that we live underneath. There is no CEO of CMT. There's no CEO. Okay, it's owned by Paramount. Everybody's familiar with Paramount. Now, Paramount is owned, it has a CEO, by Shari Redstone. Okay, now, so Paramount owns all these different things. They own, you know, 10 different fucking little media conglomerates. They own all these little smaller pieces, right? They own the Paramount, you know, they have like a movie channel thing on it now. Right, so they own all these small little things, okay, and they own country music television. So they produce rap music for rappers, and they also produce country music. for people as well. So that's a lot of power to shift culture in society. Okay, so Sherry Redstone is the CEO here. Now, her husband, obviously, it goes without saying, she's fucking Jewish. Her husband is Sumner Redstone. Sumner Redstone was the founder of Viacom and was the chairman of CBS for years. Years. Okay, he's worth $2.6 billion. Speaks Yiddish. Okay. And you guys can look, you know, further into these. There's a lot if you guys pull up his history here. I believe he also donated a lot of money to Donald Trump. So he would be your conservative Jew, right? Your conservative Jew who puts Jelly Roll on the television. Give him a chance. Give him a chance. He's reformed. He's a Christian, I swear. You see how they do this to us? One Jew is that destructive to society. One. Only takes one. I'm here to radicalize. Welcome. We got Klosha in. Welcome. Bill Frades. Hello. Okay, so this Jew who changed his fucking name owns Viacom, owns CBS, owns all these media conglomerates. Okay. Then his wife takes over and runs Paramount. And Paramount owns, I mean, all of this stuff. Let me look a little bit. I'm sure we can find some things that Paramount owns, because it's a lot. An insane amount. Okay, so they own Paramount Plus, which is a video streaming platform. They own Pluto TV. Let's see. They own Nickelodeon, Comedy Central. They owned MTV. They did a merger with the Warner Bros., or they had a potential merger, and Sony Pictures and Apollo Global Management, all of which are owned by Jews. Okay, and they own a lot of record labels. If you pay a lot of attention to some of these record labels, they own a lot of them. So you're following along, okay? This is a few Jewish families, or probably one Jewish family. They're probably all related. It wouldn't be surprising. Literally working together to subvert an entire nation. This happened when you watch that Hollywoodism movie. The Hollywoodism movie is exactly a prime example of this. There were a dozen Jews, not even half dozen, who lived over in Europe. And it was, the six big Hollywood conglomerates that started up were from these Jews. They lived in a fucking 3-mile radius, 20-mile radius away from each other over in Europe. They were basically all neighbors. They all move to America, and they found Hollywood. All of them, just miraculously. Somehow, no Gentiles were involved. This is because they have that tribal nature, and that tribal nature is what allows them to look after their own. We need this. So if I'm a Gentile, okay, I'm a white European, and I'm succeeding in some way, shape, or form in society, it should always be my duty to try to take 5 or 6 white European Gentiles with me. We should always be trying to lift each other up. We have to have that tribal nature. Without it, we lose. This is why Jews are winning, because they do this. That's literally how they created Hollywood. It's how they own the music industry on all sectors. So they're controlling the rap industry, they're controlling the country industry, they're controlling the pop industry, they're controlling the movie industry, they're controlling the media. So how can anything ever get through their fucking fingers that is acceptable or has societal standards if that's not what they want to be allowed? If they don't want societal standards, they won't let any through. And they break these societal standards down psychologically, again, through the media, through manipulation like this, but additionally, through social conditioning, right? This is where you get this big kind of, it's viewed by most as communist rhetoric, right? But really, it's kind of like Jewish subversion tactics to keep out convictions. So a really good example, feminism. Feminism did this so well. 50 years ago in the United States of America, every man in America wanted to hold a door open for their woman, or even for a random woman walking by, whether they're walking into a restaurant or a grocery store or they're going to the car. Women want to open the door. Men want to open the door and let the woman sit down. And women always used to appreciate that. They used to say, oh, well, thank you so much. That's so kind of you. You're looking after me. You're looking out for me, right? They also used to go and pull the woman's chair out. The idea is that they don't have to work. It shows that they have a conscious care for that person. So now, how have Jews subverted something as simple as us holding the door for each other, which, by the way, is a community-driven thing? How have they subverted that? They got women to be convinced that I don't need a man to hold the door for me. That's patronizing. I don't need your help. Feminism. One little, something as simple as holding the door open for somebody. And people don't realize this is a really big thing. Doing a kind, little just kind favor for somebody. That is how community thrives, on small favors constantly repeated in a cycle around each other. And if I go to a store and I see a fucking bull dyke behind me with pink, green, purple, blue hair who's morbidly obese and looks more manly than I do with the same fucking haircut as me, I'm not holding the door, because 9 times out of 10, they're going to say, oh, I don't need you to hold the door for me. I'm a fucking man. I can handle that. I don't need no man to hold the door for me. I got that shit. Right? And then they act like you're some kind of asshole for assuming that they can't hold the door, which isn't the case. Never was the case. There was never an assumption that they couldn't hold the door. It was being polite so they don't have to hold the door. So now people think, oh, I don't even know if I want to hold the door for that person. What if they take offense to that? So now you don't hold the door for people. I still do. I don't give a fuck. But a lot of people now, they won't. Right? That's how they broke down one small community-driven thing. A little favor like that. Right? Little polite thing. Now, further. Pronouns. There's another one. Slowly breaks down that sense of community. You look at somebody that's in their youth. Right? Back in the day, old people used to look at a youngster that's making a bad decision and go, hey, kid, what the fuck are you doing? Where are your parents? You're being a little asshole. Get over here. And they would discipline someone else's kid because there was community standards. Now, if you discipline someone's kid, you're 9 times out of 10 terrified you're going to be sued. So you don't discipline somebody's kid. You let them walk around the grocery store and break bottles and jars and throw shit off the shelves and throw a temper tantrum. Because if you don't, you might get sued. Because there's no community standards anymore. It's broken down. Pronouns, same thing. Oh, I'd like to ask that lady a question, right? Well, how do I address this person? I don't know how they're going to take the pronouns. Well, all right, I'm not going to address them by their genders. So now you're walking on eggshells to have a conversation with somebody. Community standards are breaking down. Now you don't want to have a conversation with people. You don't want to discipline people. You don't want to hold the door for people. You don't want to do favors for people. All of this, it's intentional. None of this is accidental. People didn't just one day wake up and go, I want to be called by this pronoun. No, this was an idea that was given to them. It was fomented into their minds. Women for thousands of years were completely fine being called women. For thousands of years, people were fine with saying, man, right? We talk about modern man. We talk about the evolution of man. It was never the evolution of the binary. It was the evolution of man. We've always talked about that. It's always been the case. Why is it different now? because it's a foreign alien idea that is being seeded into the minds of our people. It's given to them the same way that the conservative talking points are given to these people, these psychotic, society-breaking, psychological socialization mind fucks have been given to people. And it works. A lot of people fall for it because a lot of people simply are altruistic and they just don't want to offend. That's the big one. So that's always important, those things. Those small little standards, complimenting people that are dressed nice, it encourages more people to dress nice. Dressing nice yourself, it sets that standard. Holding the door for somebody encourages them to do it for somebody else. These little things. And not this, social media version of community help, community behaviors, because the social media driven version is repulsive, right? They have influencers on YouTube and all these other websites making videos of them handing money to the homeless or doing this for somebody or doing that for somebody. Sorry, I don't know why my FTJ chat was not updated. It just updated now. Hicks, thank you for the info on the Odyssey mute. We did get that fixed, thank you. D-Bot says, Jerry Heller started it with Compton rap. Straight out of Compton. Yeah, I'm not familiar with Jerry Heller. I'll have to look into that. Sorry about that, guys. The FTJ chat was not updated. Yeah, that's a good point. Thorne says, I remember in the 90s when masculine women were just called tomboys and effeminate boys were called a fag. It's true. Now you can't call anybody a fag because it's offensive. It's the thing, again, all of these offensive things or you don't want to hurt people's feelings, none of this is actually about protecting people's feelings. None of it's about people's psychological safety. It's all about breaking down societal values one by one. And they love, they use this with a victimhood complex, because people that have a victim complex are far more likely to behave in this manner and push these horrendous societal values, anti-values. They're not values, anti-values. You see this a lot with blacks, right? They do the whole victim race card complex. Blacks go and shoot up and loot a store, and then they say, oh, well, but we live in a poor area. It's not fair. You know, economic circumstances, right? And this is why I know a lot of people are tough on the language piece. I've heard quite a people kind of try to push some backlash in my direction for rougher language that I use. I use the rougher language not to offend, not to create problem, but rather to show that they're just words. This is the, and when we allow this, let's, for instance, the word nigger, that's the big one. It's always the big one. Oh God. Oh geez. Oh God. Now no one reacts like that when someone says faggot. No one has any reaction even similar to that. Or, I'm sorry, not faggot. I meant cracker. They do have that reaction when you say faggot. Cracker. No one goes, he called him a cracker. Oh my God. Don't you know that's racist? No one does that. Again, because it wasn't given to them to do that. So the problem is if we use any word, we take any word and say, okay, we're not going to say that anymore, right? We're not going to do that anymore. Now, slowly over time, what happens is any word can just be taken out and they say, oh, well, that word's offensive now. Well, that word's offensive. And we slowly start twisting and distorting and changing our language. Language is how you perceive the world. So when they start changing your language, they're changing your worldview by definition. Right? When I say oak tree, You have an image in your mind because you know what an oak tree is. If I'm just to say tree, you might have an entirely different image inside of your mind because you might be thinking of a birch tree or you might be thinking of a redwood tree. So language is literally how you view the world. So if I have a conversation with you and I say a word and that word has a different perception to you than it does to me, we have a problem. I'll give you a really good example of this. The word eugenics. The word eugenics is one of the most demonized and distorted words in human history. Eugenics, by the etymology of the word, means good creation. It comes from Greek. Eugenics simply means to breed good offspring. That's what it means. Eugenics has somehow been conflated to euthanasia, which is still it's mercy killing or good relieving, right? Again, it comes from Greek as well, the eu in the front, which means good, beneficial. So it gets conflated that you want to sterilize people and start murdering people, right? Euthanizing people on mass scale. That's what they hear when they hear the word eugenics. So if I say, "Oh yeah, guys, I'm a supporter of eugenics," well, instantly most of the room's gonna go, "What? You want to kill people?" Because that's how they perceive the word. It's not what the word means, but it's how it's perceived, right? For instance, if I say I'm a Hitler supporter, people go, "Oh, you want to kill Jews?" No, never said that. Why are you? Why? Because that's what they've been given to think. Right? When I say I'm a Hitler supporter, well, I have a completely different view of Hitler because I have an understanding of what that guy said and did. So I look at his stuff and I say, oh, Hitler was just trying to reinstitute nationalistic traditional principles into his country. He tried very hard. He was a very peace-loving man. And I think he was very intelligent. He was a philosopher. He was an artist. So I say, I like Hitler. That's what I mean. Well, other people, they hear that, and because they've been given an idea of what he is, they think I mean I like mass murder and gas chambers and genocide, which all of which did not happen. So words are very important. And if we allow anyone to take any one word from us, that's the beginning to no end. Again, the normalization process always starts slow. It always starts with one thing, one little piece here. And then you go, oh, all right, well, that's no big deal. That's no big deal. I don't have to say nigger. It's no big deal. And then next, now they take faggot. And then you go, well, yeah, I'll just call them gays or queers, whatever. It's not a big deal. I don't need to say it. And then now slowly, now you can't say he or him, because that might be offensive, because you hurt somebody's feelings with it. So, oh, I won't use pronouns anymore. I'll just rework the entire structure of my sentences. Where do you think that goes? Where do you think this ends? It has no end. It goes to the point where now we're back in communist Russia, right, which again was Jewish, Bolshevized Jewish Russia. And now you get thrown into a gulag because you said, I think Stalin is ugly. That's offensive. It's offensive to the system. So it starts with it's offensive to this little minority group and this identity group. And then it's offensive to society as a collective. And then it becomes offensive to the system, right? So first it's a crime to say something offensive to a minority group, a protected class. Then it's offensive to say something at all societally. And then it's offensive to say something that's mean or offensive to the system. Okay, and that's when the system starts to crack down. We're seeing this today, by the way. This is what these anti-Semitism bills are. Because the Jews are the system. So they're hand in hand. Uh, 1488 Christian, welcome, brother. Haven't seen you in a while. How you doing? Walther, hello. Long knife, yes. First they came for the end towers, yes. Yeah, it's a slow process. So that's why, I know a lot of people think, well, maybe not a lot of people, but it's important to articulate why the word nigger is used as frequently as it is. Because people say, oh, you don't have to say that. You don't have to say that. You could get your point across without saying that. No, you can't. Because, The whole point is I'm not going to allow anybody to change my views, my language, my thought process. I'm not going to sit back and say, oh, I'm going to structure my sentence differently so I don't hurt someone's feelings. So that's really important. And again, now I also you can be decent and civilized as well. If I go somewhere, if I go to the grocery store, and a decent black dude in a fucking sweater vest opens the door for me, I'm not gonna be like, oh, thanks, nigger, because that's just not reasonable, right? It's just there's a time and a place for things, right? Now, if I see a degenerate rapper making music where he's talking about having sex with white women and raping white women and doing drugs, I'm gonna be like, oh yeah, I'm not listening to that nigger music because that's what it is, right? It's ignorant. So the ignorance is what gives that word, right? It's just like I don't call someone a retard unless they do something retarded. If you don't act stupid, I'm not gonna call you a retard. I have no reason to. Imagine someone some nice person comes to you and buys you a really nice, well put together dude comes and buys you a beer in the bar and you're like, oh, thanks, you fucking retard. You don't do that. It's just not reasonable, right? So you have to be human. And it's the same like this, I mean, this is a common sense take. This really shouldn't even have to be explained, but it's just about being human. And there's a time and a place for these things, right? So I've used this example before, but like if I'm in the DMV, right, and I see anybody who's been to a DMV in America, it's like 80% brown. Like you're in a massive minority, right? And if I see a black dude getting up and his pants are sagging down all the way and he's got tats all over the place. He looks like shit. He looks like he hasn't showered in weeks. And he's walking with a swagger and he's got all these big chains on, walking up to go get his license photo. I'm not gonna like stand up in the DMV and go, oh wow, that nigger looks retarded. And then you're gonna get dogpiled by the 50 other black people in the DMV, right? So, like, there's a time and a place. There's self-discipline with things like this. So, again, language is extremely important. Language is the absolute most important thing in the world, but you have to be reasonable and correct with your language. It's the same thing. I'll give a really good example. Really good example. Okay, people use the phrase, and they use this hyperbolically, and they're joking every time they say it. But it's a phrase you have to be very careful about. They use the term "gas the Jews." I've heard a lot of people say this, "gas the Jews." Right? Now, the joke about this is that obviously there were not gas chambers. No one was gassed, right? So that's the joke. It's hyperbole, right? Now, the thing is if you're joking with your friends in like a circle about it, and it's clearly a joke, that's fine, right? But now when we're like going onto a public platform and someone is, at a city council meeting or they're in a Twitter space with a lot of normies in there and there's, a couple thousand listeners and they're like, oh yeah, fuck the Jews, gas the Jews. Even though you are joking and you're being hyperbolic, the average person, think about perception of language, the average person thinks gas chambers existed. So they think you're re-advocating for what already has happened, right? So it's very important with language. Language is crucial, and timing is crucial with your language. Because if you use the right word in the wrong place, or the wrong word in the right place, or the right word in the wrong place, it still doesn't matter. It's still the wrong concept. So you have to use words where they're correct to use. Otherwise, you run into obvious problems. And yeah, context matters. Yeah, it's a really good way of simplifying it. Yes. And we could go further into how language has been subverted. We could really drag that back to the concept of kids keeping you busy. That's great. It's good to hear. We could bring that back to the concept of the music industry, right? Because what's pushing the music industry? Degenerate language, right? Again, fuck this, fuck that, fuck this, fuck that. It's every other word. It's every word. It's constant, right? And they say a lot of nasty stuff that I don't even want to repeat, right? Just vile trash is flying out of their mouth at all times. So what do other people do? They talk like that naturally. When's the last time you heard a parent say something about children cursing or getting upset about a child cursing, or not even a parent, just like an older individual, 40 and up, hearing a child curse and saying, "Whoa, whoa, watch your potty mouth, watch your language." When's the last time we've heard any of that? It's gone. That standard is gone. The internet has taken that away. Again, slow process. Slow process. Happened through Hollywood. Originally, you couldn't say bitch and ass on television. Then they went, okay, we can use ass in certain contexts. Certain context. Oh, okay. Now you can say bitch in certain context. Now TV shows are saying fuck, damn it, shit. People are showing penises naked on the television. It's gone. The standards are gone. They're completely, they've just been drained away. Long knife, that one might be a little bit easier. They might believe you, but that one's pretty easy to convince away from. But language is tough. It's one of the toughest pieces in this fight is it goes right along with our discussion on Monday where we talked about how you portray yourself, how you dress, how you look, how you act is extremely important in spreading this message. And language is a really big piece of that, right? So how you speak, what words you use, and I'm not saying you have to be using, all eight syllable massive, huge adjectives in every sentence. That's not what we're saying. But you be decent. Be decent in your language, and especially when you're talking to new people. Yeah, Joker, I don't know anything about him, but sounds good to me. I think more of these thug rappers need to be on trial. They should be on trial for making the music that they make. That should be a criminal offense. All of them brag about literally doing illegal drugs on their songs. Yeah, married couples had to separate beds on old TV, yeah. We've talked about that on the show too. That was another thing that they broke down. Again, everything is a slow process of normalization, so that's why convictions are super important. So the next time that you're at the store and you see something, you see a woman in sweatpants, give her the fucking stink eye. Give her the fucking stink eye. Make her know that she looks repulsive. Let her know. You don't have to be an ass. You don't have to say, "Oh God, you look terrible." You could. Shame is a really important concept for convictions. Shame is a really good way to uphold values. That's how faggots were kept in the closet for years. Shame is very important. So next time you see a woman in sweatpants with her hair in a bun and a big football hoodie on, give her the stink eye. Just go, ew. See how she reacts. Don't do it to a black woman, though. She'll just beat you up. She'll chimp out. Do it to a white woman. We don't. You're not gonna hold a standard with people that don't have those standards. So, obviously, have discernment. Yeah, I can't stand that. We talked about that on Monday's show as well. Yeah, they are Klasha. It's terrible. Yeah, shame is how women implement social norms. Yeah, I absolutely. That's what the whole again when we talked about how it's now unacceptable to say nigger in society, that was done through shame. They go, every time go watch any of those. Omegle videos that people do where they use harsher language. Whenever they come across like young women, they're always the ones that are, oh, you can't say that. That's racist. They always are the ones that are doing that. Hicks says, any idea? Sorry, I'm not caught up with the chat, guys. There's so much going on. I'm basically just monologuing. Hicks says, any idea what the Jewish influence is on gaming? Katie7 brought it up in the Rumble chat. It's strong. In the modern age, it's very strong. So gaming was actually gaming was very cultured and fantastic in the very beginning because it was an extremely Anglo industry. Almost all video games were either made by Anglos or Japanese people were the two primary creators of video games for a very long time. And then Jews unfortunately got themselves into the woodwork with these things. So I'll give you a really good example. I'm going to give you actually a fantastic example. It goes right back to our concept of normalization. For those that are out there that have played video games before, one in the chat room, if you are familiar with the game The Last of Us, two if you're not familiar with that game, one if you're familiar, two if you are not. If there's quite a few people that aren't, I will explain the concept. Having some allergies, man. Wow, a lot of ones. Okay, I'm actually surprised. Didn't think I had a lot of gamers in my chat. A lot of ones. Holy shit. Okay, all right, we got some twos. Okay, so for those that are not familiar with The Last of Us, The Last of Us was a post-apocalyptic video game. You followed a character named Joel. He was a very traditional white man, big beard, deep, manly, masculine voice. And society is being overrun by, a zombie-like plague, something like that, okay? And you find this girl who apparently has the cure to this disease, and you have to basically take this young girl across the country, surviving a zombie apocalypse, to get the cure. Okay. I won't spoil the end in case anybody decides they want to play a fucking video game. All right. Cultured game. Decent cultured game. Now, here's the thing though. It was the wedge in the door. This is what Jews do. Okay, it was written by a Jew. I'll pull it up. Let me pull it up. Was written by a Jew. His name is Neil Druckmann. Okay, I believe he's actually a homosexual. He was born in Israel. He tried to, he was aiming to be an FBI agent. That didn't work, so instead he made video games. I think he's homosexual. I can't remember, but nonetheless, okay, Jew. See, Jew. Okay, so he comes out with this first game that's very cultured. To get people interested in the story and the series. And now people are like, "Ooh, wow. Oh, that's awesome. I love following this. Wow, it was a great game. Yeah, woo." Okay? Then he comes out with the second game. And the second game, what does he do? They instantly kill off the main character, which is the male that everybody was interested in. The new main character becomes a literal transgender that the male had killed her father in the last game, and she comes on a revenge journey, a transgender, kills off the main character in the very beginning of the second game, and then it turns out that the girl that he was going across the country with is actually a fucking lesbian. And the game, which is revolved around brutal, ruthless scenarios in a post-apocalyptic world. At the very end of the game, the girl spends the whole game hunting down this tranny to kill the tranny that fucked up his her father figure that she'd been traveling the world with for how long. And then at the end, she decides, you know what? Killing her isn't worth it. It wouldn't make me any better. And they move away in peace. It's a Jewish backdoor. Okay, so they bring something cultured to slip something else in every fucking time. That was the intention the whole time, was to take that story arc. And he th this Jew let me just show you, because the Jew admits it himself. They fucking suck, man. I get angry. I'm getting fired up. It's so imperative that people understand how these people work psychologically. see if we can find him talking about it. I'll just read this to you. So he co-wrote this with another Jew named Haley Gross. I love when that's their last name. And this is a direct quote from Wikipedia. It says, the themes of revenge and retribution were inspired by Druckmann's experiences growing up in Israel, where violence was a frequent topic. He recalled footage of the 2000 Ramallah lynching, okay, which is where Palestinians apparently killed two Israeli military reservists, and how after hearing the cheering crowds, his mind turned to violent thoughts about bringing the perpetrators to justice. So not only is he putting homosexual subversive fucking content into this game, he's also literally wrapping in his Jewish world experience, which they always do, by the way. They always do. Same with Rudolph. We read about Rudolph. It was the same thing. Right? Rudolph was written by a Jew, and he had to wrap his Jewish experience of being bullied for his nose into Rudolph. They do that a lot. I'll give you another good example. Walking Dead. TV show on Rumble. If you guys watch The Walking Dead, same thing. Started out cultured show. Great show to follow. Really interesting show. And they fuck it up. They start putting deaf black people in the zombie apocalypse and homosexuals all over the place. They ruin it. To the point where you're watching a show that started following the character of a white male with a beard and masculine abilities and traits. Hicks, thank you. I see that comment in the chat. Very kind. Thank you. You originally follow a white male with masculine abilities and traits who is high testosterone and is, you know, working through society, right? And then all of a sudden, by the end of the show, because you just, oh, I love the storyline. This is my favorite show. Now, all of a sudden, you're watching fucking some monkey on the thing doing this, and you're reading sign language on the fucking television because you still want to watch the show because you like the storyline that was originally laid out, but now the main character that we were supposed to be rumbling in the first place is gone. Everything else is gone. This is what they do. It's a back door. So they start with something good, and they slowly put this fucking trash in it. And that's why every TV show you watch, it starts out amazing, and by the end of the last three seasons, you're like, what the fuck am I watching? This is terrible. They did it with The Walking Dead, another show that they did this with. The 100. The 100 was actually a very decent show back when I did watch television, written by Jews. Starts out very cultured, very interesting. You know, the music pieces that they pick on the show are very cultured. They pick, there's a lot of really good, brutal, realistic concepts in it. And then all of a sudden, they turn the main character into a lesbian, and there's a shitload of fucking race mixing towards the end. And the women are all, you know, the dominant leader roles in the show. It's every time. It's a wedge. They stick it in, and they say, okay, look at this. This is great. They open the door up to it, and you go, oh my God, what's going on behind that door? And you go and you walk in, and you go, wow, this is awesome, holy. And they go, yeah, have a seat, hang out. You know, it's really cool. And you're like, oh sure, yeah, I'll hang out. And then you sit down, and they pull the wallpaper off, and there's fucking rainbow flags all over the wall. And you're like, what? Where am I sitting? But now the door's locked, because they already grabbed your interest. Now the door's locked, and now you're stuck in there.
Yeah, they made the guy on The Walking Dead a race traitor as well. Yep. Yeah. Again, so it's time and time and time again. It's normalization. Normalization. Mega mug, yes. Yeah, that's a good. I don't remember who that quote's from, but it's a good quote. Having a TV in your room, in your home is like having a Jew in your living room. Yeah, Jews are really good at that. So they do something that they know will appeal to your interests. They bring that in, and then they slowly start to put their shit into it. Rudolph was the same thing we talked about before, right? Oh, we're doing something about Christmas and Santa, so it gets your interest. Then you find out, wait a minute, no, that was actually a way for them to slowly bring in the concept of us loving Jews over our own. That's literally what it was. No, we don't bully him because he's different. No. We make him the one in the front of the sleigh. Yay. People fall for these things. I see someone's mentioning what my channel name is. If anybody's asking, since we got about a half hour left on the show, I'll promote a couple things while we're sitting here. If you guys are not already following me on all of my channels, please make sure to take a second to do so. We're live on Rumble. It's Logos Revealed I on my Rumble channel. We're live on Odyssey at Logos Revealed. We are live on FTJ at Logos Revealed. I'm live on Twitter, which is Logos Revealed I. And we're live on Rumble Studio on the Stu Peters Network, as always, on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern. Additionally, if you are not, please make sure that you guys are following me on Twitter. It's where my message is getting out there the greatest right now. It's my largest platform by far. I will be creating a YouTube channel very soon. I'm going to work on seeing what I can post over there, if anything. And I'm also going to start posting some clips to TikTok. So we're hitting all of the platforms. We're really going to work ourselves out there. Additionally, do not forget, if you guys want to support the show financially, there is a few options to do so in the description below through the bio sites link. You can super chat on almost all of the websites that we're on. You can super chat on Odyssey. You can super chat on Rumble. Just do remember, if you guys are wanting to support on Rumble, if you want to support me directly, you would have to do so through my personal Rumble channel, not the Stu Peters Network. That will go to Stu, which nonetheless, you are still more than welcome to do that. You can also support on FTJ Media. FTJ has the lowest processor fees out of any website, only 3%. It's extremely low, so we're not giving all of our money to a middleman, which is very, very kind of them over there. We've got crypto wallets as well. I know it's not really a big thing. Well, at least it doesn't seem like a big thing. A lot of people talk about crypto, but I don't get a lot of crypto transactions, so I don't promote it much. I might get rid of the crypto soon. So it's really it's not something that people are using as much as I thought. I thought because it's kind of like an anonymous route, it might be more interesting, but I'll probably just get rid of that. People seem to like the super chats a lot more. And don't forget, the best way that you guys can help support my content is share it around. Sharing my content around is a major way to help this content. It gets it out there. It gets our message out to more people, brings more people into our area of understanding. It's always a very important route to take. So I highly encourage you guys to do that as well. Speaking of super chats, oh, we got Hicks with a $25 FTJ super chat. Thank you, my friend. No message tacked onto it. But I'm sure if you had one, you'd have something nice to say. Thank you, brother. I appreciate you. And it was very nice chatting with you the other day, or yesterday, rather. So we got about 30 minutes left of the show, folks. I will be doing a show tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm probably gonna do. I'm gonna do a call-in show tomorrow. I'm really feeling a call-in show. I haven't done one in a bit. Hopefully, I'm in a mood like I am today. I'm in a very relaxed mood today. I like this. I don't feel rushed. I don't feel like I have something else to do or on my mind, which makes my show flow a little bit better. I feel like today's show has flowed quite well with the what can I say here? Like the monologues, they're flowing well. I don't feel like they're forced because I'm trying to kind of get it out and be done at a certain time. And yeah, it just feels a little bit more relaxed. No stopping. It says I got my friend Eddie to start watching you. Yesterday I got you one follower. Awesome, thank you. I appreciate that. I hope he's enjoying the content, finding it insightful. The tip was for the Jew accent. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I've been told my Jew accent's pretty good. Promise I'm not Jewish. I've just studied them enough. It's actually really easy to do a Jew accent. You just got to make yourself extremely nasally. When is my show with Jack Brady? That is going to be the 20th of December. Yeah, mattering. Well, there are. I do not. I do not advocate video games. I don't advocate people playing video games. I think it's a waste of time. But there are some cultured video games out there. They exist. They're far and few in between. Mostly, they're old ones that are already in existence that have been around for, a decade or more. So if you guys want to, if you guys want to actually play decent video games, look back at old stuff. There's a lot of old stuff that has really good culture in it. Specifically, when I was young, I played a lot of the Fallout series. The Fallout series is a very, very cultured game. There's a lot of philosophical concepts written out in that, all of which are incredibly European. It's a fantastic game. There's no political correctness in it. There's no homosexuality or all this dumb shit. The game is it's just it's normal. It speaks to the European soul. Yeah, so yeah, I do encourage if you guys want take a note down. The show that I'm going to be doing on the 20th of December. It looks like we're let me check the time. I think we set a time. One second. It's going to be an evening show because my guests are going to be in Australia. It looks like we're going to be doing 9 p.m. Eastern on the 20th. Let me write this down. I haven't written it down yet. We're going to do 9 p.m. Eastern. I really encourage you guys to catch that show. We're going to be analyzing the Myth of the 20th Century, which is a fantastic book. If you guys haven't read that book, I really recommend it. I guess speaking of books and recommendations, I'll promote one more thing. I don't promote it often because I don't want to. Again, I just don't want my show to be all me fucking pushing products and stuff. It's an unfortunate thing that running a show and trying to do a show full time or very consistently. You have to be promoting something to get by. So I don't promote often, but let me promote. If you guys are familiar with Money Tree Publishing, I want to encourage you guys to check out moneytreepublishing.com. Let me zoom in the screen a little bit here. Okay, so got a lot of really and really good works on here. I'm trying to get more on here as well. I'll talk to Dave about it, but. We've got White Power by George Lincoln Rockwell. It's a fantastic book. If you're not familiar with that, I really recommend you guys check that out. Siege is a very good book if you want to know about the history of the white nationalist movement in the United States of America. We've got Jewish Supremacism by David Duke. Fact or Fiction, The 6 Million. This puts the Holocaust down to a science. Got good old Mein Kampf. Must read. If you have not read this yet, I don't know what the hell you're doing. You're clearly you don't care enough. Myth of the German Villainy. That's a pretty good one that goes into the myth, this falsity of the idea of these Germans being these evil people. International Jew by Henry Ford gives a really good account of the Jewish influence in America and what they've done. He actually exposes in this book that they rigged the World Series of baseball in the 20s. He exposes that. War Against Whites. I'm not familiar with this book, actually, so I can't say much about that. Jews Are the Problem. It's by Io Kamathi. Pretty good book. Exposing the Lies of History. This is a really good starter book for normies. If you have a normie family member that doesn't know a lot about these things, really good starter book. It gives a broad, very brief kind of little understanding of each little topic. Just a little bit. Just some here's some filler, here's some filler. Kind of gets people their boots off the ground a little bit on that. The Host and the Parasite. It's pretty good work. Exploding Middle East Myths. I'm not familiar with that one. And The Synagogue of Satan is obviously a favorite that everybody enjoys. So let's say you want to get one of these books. If you want to purchase, there's also DVDs on there. I don't really promote DVDs because I don't buy DVDs. If you want to buy one, you're more than welcome to do so. Say you want to buy Mein Kampf. So you hit add to cart. And you're going to get prompted with a coupon code. When you get that coupon code, type in LOGOS, L-O-G-O-S, hit enter, and you're going to save 10% off of your order. You see this? We got coupon code 10% off. This goes for all books, anything on Money Tree Publishing. They all have a coupon code on it. And when you type that coupon code in, you save 10%. I get a little bit of the cut. Obviously, the person who runs the website gets a cut. As they are running a very good website that's bringing books that you just can't find anywhere else. You're not going to find especially a set like that anywhere else. And you're also supporting yourself because you're getting yourself reading and learning about these extremely crucial topics. So I always encourage, pick yourself up a book. And if it, you know, a lot of people say, like, pick one up for a family member. If you are going to do that, pick up Exposing the Lies of History for a family member. That's a really good starter book. Give me 1 second. I'm going to grab it. I'll show you guys this book really quickly. Okay. It's a big one. It's big format. Here it is. It's a good coffee table book. Like, toss this, you got like a dentist, throw this on the dentist's office coffee table, right? You know how they have the magazine racks at the doctor's office? Pop one of these in a magazine rack. You know, someone picks it up. What the hell? What's this? Right. So this is really good. They go into so he goes into Zionism, what Zionism is, to help explain it. Again, this is all normie friendly, so this is meant for people that don't know much about this. He goes into the Rothschilds. He goes into Jews and how they refer to non-Jews as subhumans. He talks about what Benjamin Franklin said about the Jews. He goes into the Talmud, the protocols, Israel, the media, communism, World War I, World War II, the Bolsheviks, the Morgenthau Plan. He goes into Adolf Hitler, the Katyn Massacre, which is a really big one if you guys aren't familiar with that. That's where the Bolsheviks killed like a shitload of Polish people, especially some like high-ranking officers, and they blamed it on the National Socialists. They go into, you know, the Holocaust. He goes into a lot of this stuff, and he does it very simply, very fact-based. Kosher tax, French Revolution, the Illuminati, Freemasonry, a little bit about America, 9/11. So I always recommend if you have a brand new person that you want to teach this stuff to and you want them to get a good introduction, this book is a perfect introductory book. This is the best introductory book for it. I read it front to back. Very good book. I took some notes on it. For those that are asking for the link, this is moneytreepublishing.com. I'll throw a link in all of the chat rooms so you guys can check that out. There you go. Yeah, I agree. You know, you never know if people are actually going to actually read something that's sitting on a coffee table or something. But I can't recommend this enough, guys. If you have not read Mein Kampf, if you are a truth seeker and you care about this movement and you want to know where this goes, how we can all fix the situation that we are in, there is no better guiding factor than Mein Kampf. It is the most prescient book of our time right now, living in this Jewish-controlled system where they are actively extincting our people off the face of the earth. This is a must-read book. So if you have not gotten Mein Kampf yet, if you haven't read it yet, please take a second, take a couple hours. It's not going to take a second. It's a pretty long book. Take a couple hours. Force yourself to do it. I promise you. I guarantee you. You will feel so good that you did it because you'll learn a lot. It really will help to give you a very accurate worldview of what we're dealing with right now. This man was a philosopher. He was one in a million, one in a billion. He's a fantastic philosopher. So take your time, pick that book up, give it a read. You'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot about human psychology. You'll learn a lot about our situation and what the goal of the Jews is. Please read the book. I promise you will really appreciate it. And I always recommend the Stalag edition. That is actually, fortunately, the one that is on Money Tree Publishing. But you can also do this. The Thomas Dalton edition is another good one. A lot of people promote that. It's not a bad one. I like the Stalag because it's more authentic. It's the only one that was authorized by the NSDAP. And just make sure, if you are going to get Mein Kampf, do not read the Mannheim edition. Do not read the Murphy edition. Do not read the Ford edition. These editions are intentionally subverted. Well, with that said, we're coming up on the last 15 minutes here, folks. I'm dry on the topic. I don't want to jump back into culture again and music industry and then end up going to a point where I'm gonna overdo the time here. So I think we'll close up a little bit early again today. Again, we're gonna be live tomorrow, folks, 7 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to be doing a call-in show, and I'm also going to be live on Friday as well at 4 p.m. Eastern with our typical show, and we're always live at 1 p.m. Eastern. We do a co-host show with G-Man, so make sure you guys catch that as well. How is the Ford edition subverted? I don't have mine. I can read it. I believe the Ford edition is actually the one that has the ADL ADL preface in it. Maybe not. Maybe that's the Mannheim. I'm not exactly sure. I can't remember off the top of my head. I recommend the Stalag or the Thomas Dalton edition. Those are the two that are the most authentic in this regard. Yeah, the Mannheim edition is bad. All right, with that said, guys, thank you so much for watching. Make sure you share the show. Follow me on all my channels. And if you want to support the show, all the options to do so, again, are in that bio site link. We've got the crypto wallets. We've got the super chats, the whole nine yards. Thank you, guys. The support on the show this last couple months has been amazing. Just these chats being so active is always really uplifting, helps put a lot more motivation and enthusiasm into the shows. We got some people to hang out with. It'd be kind of boring if I was doing it alone. So thank you guys for chatting, and get your phones and your computers ready. We're gonna do a call-in show tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern. So call in, ask some questions, bring some thoughts up, whatever you got for me. We'll listen in. So all right, thank you guys. Talk to you guys tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern. Anybody can call in. We'll be live on Rumble, Odyssey, Twitter, and FTJ. Alrighty, I'll see you guys then. Thanks again.